Good afternoon and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California.
News for you.
News for SC. I'm Jamila Hammond. We're coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Colby Martin. It's Thursday, April 28th, 2022. Today's last show of the school year.
I can't believe it. President Biden's plan for student loan forgiveness.
I'm in the process of taking a hard look at whether or not there will be additional debt forgiveness.
Efforts to combat California's worsening drought.
WNBA champion Shea Murphy makes history in Los Angeles.
And the rise in violence as Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month draws near.
All that and more after these news headlines.
From Annenberg Media, I'm Will Simons. President Biden asked Congress to provide an additional $33 billion in aid to Ukraine on Thursday. Biden's package includes sending Ukraine more ammunition, artillery, and humanitarian aid. The legislation will also make it easier for authorities to seize the physical assets of Russian billionaires. Biden urged Congress to pass his proposal quickly. Oklahoma lawmakers passed a bill allowing private citizens to take legal action against abortion providers. The bill is the most recent effort by Oklahoma legislators to curtail abortion rights. Oklahoma Governor Republican Kevin Stitt has pledged to sign every piece of legislation restricting abortion rights in the state. When signed by Stitt, the law will be put into effect immediately. The FDA proposed banning menthol cigarettes, flavored cigars, and cigarillos. The ban was praised by health and civil rights groups who say that menthol cigarettes have severely harmed the Black community, who make up the majority of menthol smokers. However, other groups say banning menthol cigarettes will criminalize Black smokers. While the ban's effect could be years away, it would be the harshest measure taken by the FDA since it started regulating tobacco in 2009. The GDP declined 1.4% in the first quarter of 2022. This is a sharp turn from the nearly 7% growth rate in the last months of 2021, and the most the economy has shrunk since the beginning of the pandemic. The Commerce Department attributed the decline to a drop in exports and decreased spending by the government. These are the top headlines from today.
President Joe Biden is considering taking action to erase some student debt. Eli Maskett has more.
Joe Biden plans to announce a new student loan forgiveness plan in the coming weeks. He is looking at canceling about $10,000 of each American's student debt.
I am considering dealing with some debt reduction. I am not considering $50,000 debt reduction, but I'm in the process of taking a hard look at whether or not there will be additional debt forgiveness.
Some lawmakers believe that he should cancel at least $50,000 of student debt. One of them is Senator Elizabeth Warren.
We know that the president has the authority to cancel student loan debt, and the best way we know that is because President Obama did it, President Trump did it, and President Biden has now done it repeatedly.
There are opponents of college debt cancellation who argue that it forces taxpayers who haven't attended higher ed to help pay off loans that aren't theirs. The pressure to announce a new student loan forgiveness plan comes as Biden's approval rate continues to fall with young Americans. The midterm elections loom ahead. At the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, Biden froze the requirement of 41 million American borrowers having to pay back their federal student loans. He then further postponed payment to August 31st of this year.
One first thing we did was reform the system that was in place that didn't work for anybody, that allowed people to write off debt if they engaged in public service. We have almost 1,785,000, don't hold me the exact number, I'll get the number, 700 and some thousand have had debt forgiven, their whole debt forgiven because of their work, working in either as teachers or other means by which they qualify.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the action may have to come through Biden's executive powers.
So what we're really talking about is authorities through executive action, which we're continuing to look at and he's continuing to consider.
Experts have debated whether debt forgiveness can come through executive power. During his campaign, Biden said he would work towards forgiving student debt. The president will likely make an announcement in the coming weeks. For Annenberg Media, I'm Eli Maskett.
Southern California's drought continues to get worse. the Metropolitan Water District has placed new water restrictions on SoCal residents. The restrictions will hopefully help with the water problems. Joey Elbaum has more on the story.
Southern California residents are prepared for brown lawns and less water usage. Drought and climate change leave a large portion of Southern California with a large water shortage. According to officials, conditions today are far more critical than they've ever been. They also say more severe limitations may be put in place in the future. Metropolitan Water District of Southern California General Manager Adele Haga-Khalil said, "With this historic drought getting worse, we cannot afford green lawns." Officials have limited residents' outdoor water use to one day a week for nearly 6 million residents. The restrictions will primarily affect people in parts of Los Angeles, Ventura, and San Bernardino counties. This is the first widespread water restriction imposed on Southern California during this extreme drought. Residents found not complying with the MWD's orders will receive consequences. First offenders will be given door tag warnings. Spokesman Mike McNutt said three offenses exceeding 150% of the water budget will lead to flow restriction devices installed at offenders' homes. There will be patrols through the area to ensure people are complying. The main reason for this decreased water supply? Climate change. Gloria Gray, chairman of the MWD's board of directors, said, "We knew climate change would stress our water supply, but we did not know it would happen this fast." She went on to say, "It is a challenge unlike anything Metropolitan has ever faced. California has experienced its driest ever start to the year. There is less snowfall this winter and reservoirs have drained." Haga-Khalil said a full outdoor watering ban could happen in September if there is no immediate improvement. California's drought is now in its third year, and the MWD has been left without enough water in parts of Southern California. Watering restrictions and other measures will take effect on June 1st in Los Angeles and Ventura counties, as well as parts of the Inland Empire and San Gabriel Valley. For Annenberg Media, I'm Joey Elbaum.
As April ends, we head into May, Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. The U.S. has seen a rise in anti-Asian violence this past year, but it must be acknowledged that this is not a new occurrence. And as Mendy Kong reports, it has to do with the history and modern-day effects of colonialism and imperialism.
The British called them coolies, the indentured laborers from China, India, and other Asian countries. Coolie comes from the Indian word for wages and refers to low-wage workers. Eventually, in the English-speaking West, coolie came to be a racially charged slur against low-wage immigrant workers, and specifically, a derogatory code word for Asian. Michael Fraga is a social science professor at California State University, Dominguez Hills. He explained that Britain, which had colonized India and China, essentially said, "Let's use them to work in our colonies abroad."
Indentured followed closely on the heels of slavery in order to replace the slaves. The laborers were, however, only slightly better off than the slaves had been. They were supposed to receive either minimal wages or some small form of payout, such as a small parcel of land or money for their return passage upon completion of their indentures. But unlike slaves, these imported servants could not be bought or sold.
As you may or may not have learned in high school U.S. history classes, one of the first waves of Asian immigration to the U.S. was Chinese railroad workers during the 1849 gold rush. But there is more to the story. The migration of these coolies to the U.S., South America, and the Caribbean was tied to the practice of slavery. In the U.S., in Louisiana, white plantation owners looked to coolies or Asian workers as replacements after enslaved black workers rebelled and abandoned sugar plantations en masse in the 1850s. This is also where the rhetoric about Asians being the model minority began to arise. Plantation owners believed coolies would be submissive, obedient, and easily exploited workers. This was not to be the case. Eventually, the Chinese workers demanded higher and more fair wages, and when that didn't happen, they left the sugar farms. The story of coolies is a long and tragic one, as are present-day circumstances in which Western powers, like the U.S., take advantage of and enrich themselves off the resources and peoples of countries they have destabilized. Sukhdev Sandhu teaches at New York University in the Department of Social and Cultural Analysis. In 2013, he moderated a conference on Chinese and Indian coolie labor in Cuba and Guyana.
And I think in our case, for kind of scholars of migration and of often kind of immiserated labor, this opportunity to excavate these histories, to hack at and through the kind of wilderness of amnesia and of sort of misrepresentations over decades, it's incredibly important to us. We don't want to let go. It may be a sickness. It may be violating to us. But we have to keep going through it.
Coolies is a term no longer in use today, thankfully. But undocumented migrant labor is still what holds up the U.S. economy. And it is imperative to recognize how history repeats itself again and again in the American empire. Happy Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month! For Annenberg Media, I'm Mendy Kong.
I'm Colby Martin, and we are glad you're with us for From Where We Are.
And I'm Jamila Hammond. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Coming up, LA native and WNBA champion Shea Murphy is here in Studio B to discuss her career and next steps. Stay tuned.
This Friday marks the last day of spring classes, and as professors and students all push past the finish line, there's one word you might be hearing over and over again. Here's Kari Spencer with the word that describes that perpetual tiredness and apathy on the rise.
There are 2 weeks until finals season ends and summer begins, and it feels like there's a flame that's miraculously been sustained for months, and it has been burning and burning and building and burning, and it's about to reach a point where it just burns out. Yeah, I'm burnt out. And chances are, if you ask any other student death gripping a dulce latte with dark circles around their eyes, they'd say they're burnt out too. It's a phrase heard daily around here, and one that's been frequently used to describe the exhaustion people have reached year two of the pandemic.
4.3 million Americans quit their jobs in August alone. That's actually a record. The biggest reason? Burnout.
But it's not just slang. In the early 1970s, American psychologist Herbert Freudenberger first used the term, describing it as a state of mental and physical exhaustion caused by one's professional life. He was writing specifically about overworked volunteers at a free clinic, and because of that, the term was initially linked to people in helping industries, i.e. therapists, doctors, caretakers. Then, in 2019, the World Health Organization actually recognized burnout as a syndrome. According to their definition, burnout stems from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. It's characterized by feelings of exhaustion, cynicism, and increased mental distance from one's job, and lowered productivity. Sound familiar? As finals season continues, I can bet money that at least four of my friends will joke about dropping out. There's that cynicism and increased mental distance. We are all exhausted, and it shouldn't have to be that way. For a lot of students who are balancing some combination of schoolwork, class, jobs, internships, and extracurriculars, burnout is, unfortunately, a word that resonates. But because it's used so nonchalantly and is a World Health Organization-recognized syndrome, we can start to understand it as a phenomenon with causes beyond ourselves. There's no shame in needing to take preventative steps back sometimes. Routinely practicing self-care, asking for help, and being selective with what you prioritize are all steps that can be taken to avoid reaching a point of burnout. And if you are feeling burnt out, it could be a good idea to talk to a mental health professional about it, just to make sure it's not overlapping with or becoming something more serious. To those who need to hear this, good luck with finals, and don't drop out. For Annenberg Media, I'm Kari Spencer.
If you've been on TikTok, odds are you've heard the term girl boss. Sam Tarlov prepared this story on the origin of the word and how the term has evolved over the past few years.
I'm a boss, 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 Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. The phrase that seems to be on the lips of every Gen Z college student, parodying the modern girl boss and the brand of white millennial feminism that was once so popular. But what exactly is a girl boss? And how did the word go from an inspirational moniker to an ironic meme? The origins of the word girl boss can be traced back to 2014, when Sofia Amoruso, CEO of the online fashion retailer Nasty Gal, released her autobiography titled #GirlBoss. The book was a New York Times bestseller and was eventually adapted into a television series for Netflix. Amoruso had her own idea of what a girl boss should be.
And it's really just about being a boss of your life. It's not about, I mean, yeah, being a girl is something that I relate to, but it's not about being the boss of other people. It's just about like being the boss of your own life.
The so-called girl boss would strive for corporate power in the male-dominated workplace and lead the fight towards equality. The girl boss would eventually use her own success to uplift other women. It was seen as a form of female empowerment that encouraged young females to achieve capitalist success. The girl boss craze soon took over, inspiring plenty of white, affluent millennial women to girl boss their way into entrepreneurial positions and try to reshape male-dominated industries. But unlike its intended goal, the girl boss only recreated the unfair power structure of the male workplace, simply with a woman on top, and one who was usually white. The downfall of the girl boss quickly ensued. Its demise was ironically reflected in the history of its founder. Less than a year after the release of her book, Sofia Amoruso stepped down as CEO of Nasty Gal, and months later, the company declared bankruptcy amidst claims of a toxic workplace. Unfair labor practices and harmful scams soon became associated with the idea of the girl boss. Nowadays, media depicting the scorned girl boss has become popularized. Just this year, we've seen television series such as Hulu's The Dropout.
I don't want to be president. I want to be a billionaire.
And Netflix's Inventing Anna.
You have no clue what it's like for me. I'm a boss. I'm trying to build a foundation, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of amateurs.
Now, not all female CEOs fall into this category, but our culture loves watching the rise and fall of the girl boss. The girl boss has made somewhat of a resurgence recently in online meme culture as a word used to ironically mock capitalist white feminism. Live, Laugh, Love has now been transformed into gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss, mocking the shallow promises of white feminism and millennial culture. The girl boss will now live on as a parody of a once praised ideal. Honestly, if you want to, go and girl boss it up. But as a fair warning, make sure not to burn other people as you climb your way up to success. For Annenberg Media, I'm Sam Tarlov.
Jamila, have you ever wondered where the word memes come from?
I have, actually.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
When? What? When do you have the time of day to think about where it comes from?
I mean, it was when it first came out, but now I just, it's a meme.
And so she just revealed over public radio how ancient she is. Thank Indeed. You, Jamila, for that.
Indeed.
Shinsha Wong has the story.
Even if you didn't tune in for the Oscars ceremony, you've definitely seen the Will Smith slap memes that came out of it all over social media. Almost all of our cultural moments or news stories quickly get their accompanying memes, but how exactly did memes start in the first place? The term meme was coined by British evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins in his book The Selfish Gene way back in 1976. It was originally derived from the ancient Greek mime, which means imitated thing. Dawkins believed that cultural ideas, or memes, replicate in an imitating fashion, and that memes spread through generations, the same way genes do. Over time, the word meme has undergone shifts. If you say meme today, you're probably referring to the evolving and popular internet memes appropriated through time. Mackenzie Finclia is a student at the University of Texas, Austin. At a 2019 TED conference there, she quoted Dawkins clarifying his definition of meme.
An internet meme is a meme or a cultural idea that's been deliberately altered by human creativity. So, via the internet and cyberculture, these things become digital artistic expressions.
Today, a meme represents more of a piece of media that is repurposed to deliver a cultural, social, or political expression, mainly through humor. We all remember Grumpy Cat and Dodge. Who can forget Pepe the Frog? That was everywhere on the internet back in 2015, and later was appropriated and became a symbol for the alt-right. And when COVID became our norm, we had the Karens and okay boomers, and also the wholesome adorable pet memes, and of course, Bernie Sanders sitting there with his woven and colorful winter mittens. Oh, and about Will Smith at the Oscars?
Oh, wow! Wow! Will Smith just smacked the shit out of me.
Yep, that was cringy. But all these memes eventually became our shared cultural experience. Maybe that's why we're so obsessed with memes, because they help us create communities and a cyber culture in which we can all participate. We like how simple memes are, so people can resonate with them, overcoming cultural barriers. Memes become part of the public discourse for certain events and a vehicle for people to voice social and political commentary or laugh and distract us from reality with some commonality. Memes have created a highly nuanced form of communication. We appreciate the sense of validation we get from enjoying common memes, giving us something too rare in today's world, a way to bond with others.
Nice.
For Annabrick Media, I'm Xingqi Wang.
In October of 2021, former WNBA player and fellow Trojan Shea Murphy made headlines as the first woman hired as a coaching assistant for the LA Lakers. After 9 combined seasons playing for the Phoenix Mercury and San Antonio Stars, the former championship title holder and Angelino has returned to Los Angeles, intent on making her home team the greatest in the NBA. It would not be proper unless I try to use my basketball announcer voice. And here is Coach Shea Murphy. Thank you so much for being here, Shea.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be back. Really excited. Thanks for the intro.
How does it feel being back in LA?
Different. You know, it's excitement. The city has changed definitely since I was here last. But definitely excited. It's really diverse. You know, you love the weather, the teams, the sports, the high schools. I'm just excited to be back and just to be home with family and friends.
Yeah. So this is your first time as a Lakers coaching associate, but how do you feel your first season went, and what can we expect to actually see from the Lakers in the coming seasons?
My experience with the Lakers was, you know, once in a lifetime. It was a dream come true. Fortunately, we didn't last. You know, we didn't make it to the playoffs, and things didn't go as planned, but my experience with the Lakers, it was like I was a kid in the candy store. You know, I was, you see the celebrities come in, you're working with the greatest players in the world. And though it didn't turn out the season like we wanted, it was a once in a lifetime opportunity that, growing up from LA, being a junior Laker myself, playing in the WNBA, seeing Kobe do that, and just to be in the same halls that all these greats like Magic, all these people were able to do, you know, I was just excited to be a part of that and to be the first to represent. And hopefully, you know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish the season. So we didn't finish that well, but there's always another season to be played. So I was just grateful for my experience, you know, and they say once a Laker, always a Laker. So whether it's 5 years, you know, a little bit, you'll always be a Laker. So I'm excited to be a part of that history.
And love that. Yeah, I love that. You know, like for folks that are, whether you're listening or you're watching, you can feel the energy. You could feel like this is probably the most we've ever let our hair down, really, essentially.
Honestly, yeah.
You know, and we've had such a blast, and you are such a genuine spirit. And I know that translates on the court as well. How has Kobe's legacy impacted the way that you contribute to the Lakers? Because I know Kobe means a lot to you and growing up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kobe was who I looked up to once my father passed away, so it's, you know, everything happens for a reason. So if I could just do that daily, just embody Kobe, what he was able to do, play through injuries and his Achilles. And it's, I mean, I'm still living through that. You know, we all have, you know, they say it's 90% mental and 10% physical. And so I'm in that moment right now, transitioning from professional sports into corporate, into coaching for that, you know, for that moment. And now trying to get back to sports. I'm just trying to embody the greats like Kobe himself, you know. And every day I'm talking to myself after every free throw. Life is just like mini games, you know? So it's just how you bounce back. And so if I could do that just, you know, one day at a time, and other people can see that, maybe I'm not the most vocal leader, but I try to lead by example with my actions daily and carry that, you know, consistently. So he's everything to me, you know, and Vanessa, you know, I know what it's like to be a single mother. My mom grew up that way. I mean, I grew up that way. So just seeing the city and all the celebrities, like just rally behind her and just support her. It takes a village to raise anyone. So I've been part of that village my life, you know, so I just try to do that and give back.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Yeah. You mentioned you have a plan for success, really, when it comes to basketball, the four C's, as you call them. So conditioning, chemistry, consistency, and confidence.
Yes.
How does that tie in with Mamba mentality? And what does that term mean to you?
Well, yeah, it's funny because that fourth C actually came from Rob Pelinka, and he was really close to Kobe. So, you know, Rob's stylish. You know, you got to have confidence to do all those things. So once you get confidence, those things will consistently happen. And I think Mamba mentality is like, Kobe says it the best. It's like you have your box, and like the number one thing is for you to dance beautifully in your box. And mine, for, you know, at this time was a basketball player and to be a good person and to be who I was, whether, you know, I don't want to be identified as just a basketball player or a WNBA champ. I want to be Shea Murphy, the person. Because when this is said and gone, you know, you're going to have ups, you're going to have lows. I still want to be Shea Murphy. And so I think Mamba mentality really embodies that. When who are you going to be when it's all taken away, when no one's watching? Who are you going to be when people are watching? We're going to be when you don't speak the same language. And so I know at the end of the day, I carried that mentality around the world, and now I'm able to do it here, and I'm happy with that, you know? And I get chills right now talking about that, because, you know, one day, you know, our time's going to end on earth, and I know I'm going to see him there. I'm going to see my father, and I can't wait to chest bump him. I might give my dad a hug, but the chest bump Kobe and be like, Gigi, what's up, girl? I got your handles down, you know? So I know they're proud of me, you know, and that's my motivation right now.
I love that. Like, for folks that don't know, and I've alluded to it, you know, no matter where a coach puts you, you've remained positive. Like, how do you remain so positive and genuine spirit? And how do you use that in your coaching style? And maybe what kind of words of wisdom can you give to students as they embark on finals week?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely comes from God and my mother. Like, my mother, like, you know, we didn't come from much, but she literally told me, like, be thankful for little things and greater things will come to you. And I lived my whole life like that. So getting a scholarship at Montclair Prep and then going to USC, like, it couldn't get better. Life couldn't get better than USC. Or Montclair Prep. And then it kept getting better because I was so thankful. So, no, you know, if you get a C, you get a D, but look at it, like, at least you're getting education. So I kind of still, that mentality is my life. You know, be thankful for little things and greater things will come to you, you know? And I just literally try to be thankful for everything. And being here speaking in a studio and seeing the new Annenberg and, like, this diverse, like, producer group, I'm like, dang, you know, like, okay, I'm part of this, you know? And so I'm just always happy and grateful because we all have problems. It's just how you carry, and I don't want to carry the negative. I have a choice every day. If I can show up and be sad, or I can show up and be, like, smiling, and you know, so I'm just really excited for that. And for the students, fatigue, burnout, that's tough. You know, we're all in it, but you're almost there. You're 2 weeks away. Summer's coming. It's hot girl summer, hot guy summer. So just stay the course and don't drop out.
That's what's up.
Shea, thank you so much for putting a smile on our faces day in and day out here at Annenberg. But Shea Murphy is a former WNBA player, hopefully making a comeback, and now a coaching assistant for the Lakers. Shea, thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it.
I appreciate both of you guys, and great job. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Absolutely. And that's all we have time for on today's From Where We Are.
Jamila, what was your highlight from this semester, being a host?
Oh, gosh. You know, being here, being at the radio station every week.
Yeah.
And this is home. This was like a candy in the candy store, you know? This was awesome.
I would say, honestly, I could not have been chosen to have a better host than you. And I will say from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. I couldn't have had a better mentor.
I appreciate you. You know, for folks that don't know, we really bonded over Kevin and Bean. For folks that love radio in LA, but this has been awesome. You are incredible. You know, for folks that don't know, a lot of folks put a lot of hard work into this. Yuki Leong, Arohi Chief produced today's show. Fernando Cienfuegos runs our soundboard.
And we had help from some multimedia journalists like Grace Harrington, Mendy Kong, Kari Spencer, Sam Tarlov, Coco Shincha Wong, Xingyang Zhang, and Veronica Sierra Leone. And Derek Renfro composed our theme music.
We stream live on KXSC. Follow us at kxsc.org/listen. And we're on YouTube at Annenberg Radio News.
Subscribe to From Where We Are on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And one last time, I'm Colby Martin.
I'm Jamila Hammond. From all of us at Annenberg Radio, wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again for
From Where We Are.
This is our last episode.
Can you teach me to do a three-pointer? I mean, look, I'm vertically challenged, but I think I could try or something. I don't know.